Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal. Happy almost September. I am here with the September sermon, and I'm kind of excited about this because I did sit and meditate on what we discussed last episode, and I was sort of telling some of you that I was feeling like Horoscope Witch, the format, the podcast was sort of up for a little bit of an upgrade, right? And I needed to sort of do some reformatting, especially because I really did love doing the moon sermons, and I loved that you all seemed to love them as well, but they just weren't working for me. It was like I couldn't get them out in a scheduled kind of way that made sense to me or the podcast. And I think that was what was limiting about them, I guess. So I decided to sort of expand this idea that I used to do with the moon sermons and just sort of expand it into a monthly sermon. Okay, so this is the new idea. Dun-dun-dun, presenting you with the new format right now. We're going to see how it works. But the monthly sermon plus a monthly Q&A sort of attached to that sermon, right? So the plan, the new plan, the new format is to sort of, do a monthly sermon, right? So for the first half of this episode, I will be talking about astrology, maybe delivering some, you know, messages that I've channeled from spirit, giving you just some guidance for the month, right, that you can kind of come back to as the month progresses. But I also have kind of collected some questions from both my social media followers and my clients. So with the Q&A, I do want to start doing these every month. Like, I'm serious, my friends, like send me questions, please. No, I'm kidding. But if you feel called, and you want to be a part of the Q&A, send me some questions. I will keep you anonymous. You can kind of get a feel this episode of what kind of questions I am looking for, right? And I'll get into that during the second half of the episode. But I'm really here for any kind of topic requests or anything that you really want me to speak to. The reason I like doing Q&As is because, I just like hearing your questions, okay? And it gives me the opportunity to speak directly to you as an individual. So it's a way for us to sort of connect. And that's something that I genuinely like to do on this podcast, right? I like to connect with my listeners, right? So if you have wanted to sort of connect, or you have a question or a concern, or yeah, again, like a topic request that you want to throw at me for any upcoming monthly sermon, feel free to email me, horoscopewitch@gmail.com, or DM me on Instagram or Twitter. All of my social media stuff is in the show notes. You know the drill. And that's kind of how this podcast is evolving. I'm kind of excited about this because it's going to give, I think, just a little bit more consistency to my podcast, which is something I've struggled with for sure. And I've struggled with, just having a sort of a theme or a pattern, or I just want to talk about so many things, right? I can't help it. I'm a ninth house sun. So even though this podcast is mainly centered around astrology and tarot, I'm literally open to seeing, hearing, discussing any spiritual topic that may come to mind. So keep that in mind. I think my podcast will always be sort of this miscellaneous collection of spiritual la-la, which is fine by me because I, quite frankly, I'm a miscellaneous collection of spiritual la-la. So So we'll just kind of get into it. And let's just dive into the September sermon, right? And then later we'll get to some of your questions. Let's breathe into September for a second. So something I've been noticing about myself, in the past month or so, is that I've been getting to know the different types of frequencies I can step into. Okay, so I know that sounds, I know we're already into like the spiritual la-la, right? But I've been really getting to know there really is a highest expression of who I am. There's a high frequency that's available to me, but then there's also very much like a different version of me. There's a different version of my energy. It's sort of this lower frequency version of myself, right? And that's been really coming up for me lately. And I don't say the phrase like low frequency self to to shame either myself or anybody else. I think we all sort of get caught in the lower frequency version of ourselves a lot, right? Especially with so much chaos going on in the world, especially when our world is changing in such unpredictable ways. It's very hard to uphold your energy throughout this. It's very hard to maintain a certain a certain level, a high vibe, you know, as the Love and Lighters would call it. It's hard to maintain your high vibes when the world is sort of, you know, crashing down around you in some way. So, you know, I've been you know, in my lower frequency self, it seems, lately, especially in the past couple weeks. I think it has a lot to do with some challenging transits that I myself am going through. But I think it just has also a lot to do with this time of year, right? Because this time of year is the slowdown. Right? We have been in spring and summer, which is sort of our planting, our growing, our harvesting kind of phase, right? So even like the minute my body even feels the temperature drop, I think sometimes I kind of start to grieve a little bit. It's like my soul or my energy is like, all right, it's time to wind down. It's time to prepare to go inward. It's time to prepare to go into the shadows. And sometimes when that happens too, you know, what I really mean by this sort of feeling of being in my lower frequency energy, or this feeling of being in, just like a lower vibration of who I am, I find that when it's time to slow down, you know, self-doubt really creeps in, right? It almost feels like an understatement to call what I feel self-doubt. It feels a lot more crippling than that. And I know where I'm kind of going with this is that I've gotten to know my lower frequency self a little bit more throughout the past couple weeks. I've noticed like, huh, that's a lot of self-doubt coming up, you know? Huh, that's a lot of fight or flight coming up. Huh, that's a lot of catastrophizing that you're doing right now. And I think that's what that version of myself does, right? I can almost feel myself, you know what else that version of myself does? Keeps pushing through burnout, right? So there's almost this cycle, for me at least, of, I think it begins when I start to push through burnout, and then from there it trickles into self-doubt. From there, I trickle into sort of hopelessness or despair. And from there, I can trickle into somewhere even darker, right? Now, here's the thing. Here's where I'm at with my healing, though. Do those feelings still plague me? Absolutely, right? For sure. Do the feelings of self-doubt and hopelessness, are those things that I struggle with as a person? Absolutely. But where I'm getting to right now with my healing is that I can finally just even have the awareness, like, oh, today is August 27th. I'm kind of in a lower frequency of myself today. You know, there's been a lot of self-doubt. There's been a lot of, triggering kind of small things that, you know, have, you know, been made into a great meaning, you know, because they were triggering. There's just been a couple things that have sort of led me down the path of energy being lowered, right? And I think some of us can relate in some way, right? Now, I think that's why for the September sermon, when I was meditating on it, I think Spirit's main message was, what are you doing at the crossroads? Right? I'll ask that again. What are you doing physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually at the crossroads? Okay. Because here's the thing, that sort of phrase, like, we're at the crossroads, it happens to be maybe something that's a little bit overused, including by me, right? It's sort of this fluffy, it might be sometimes a fluffy spiritual concept, like, oh, you're at the crossroads, like, you're leveling up, you're crossing into a new phase of life or whatever, right? But I really do feel like there's something very crossroadsy about September. There's something in September that's going to be like a waiting or a pause. It's sort of like this great pause. And if you could, while you're listening to this, if you could just imagine yourself literally at a crossroads, like literally imagine yourself in sort of this fork in the road where you have two roads. There's a road ahead of you, there's a road behind you, there is a road to your left, and there's a road to your right, right? And you're just kind of sitting in the middle of this cross, literally in the middle of a crossroads, right? I think that is what September is going to feel like for a lot of us. And going back to what I was saying about becoming aware of what our sort of lower frequency self does, what are the thoughts that our lower frequency self has? What are the feelings and emotions that our lower frequency self kind of gets tangled in, kind of trips over, gets sucked into? I'm just going to gently ask you to just bring a little bit more awareness to that. And let me be clear, this is not in a shaming way at all. It's not in a way to beat yourself up for those thoughts. It's not in a way to even wish that you were not in this state, in this energetic state. It's just bringing awareness to the fact that you may be in this state, right? And it makes sense, right? Because if we are at the crossroads, there is something that is happening energetically. There is an energetic leveling up that's happening. But funny how, when we are at the step of the crossroads, some of the worst fear can come up at that point, right? Like, literally, I think some of the worst fear we have as humans happens when we are on the precipice of a shift. We are on the precipice of change, right? sort of reminds me of the moon card in the tarot, this moment in the tarot where we are sort of in the dark or confused or sort of being asked to surrender to the unknown. We have many different options of how we can move through that. But what is the monkey mind going to choose? You know, you already know the answer to that, right? So this idea, I think I kept hearing from Spirit, something like, there is much to be done at the crossroads, right? Although it's a pause, and although it's a sort of, yeah, a moment of just stopping and waiting, there's still much to be done. And we have many choices of how we can see the position that we're sitting in, right? Now, probably for most of us, if we're not putting any effort into our, like, you know, controlling our mindset, or if we're not putting any effort into, like shifting our mindset or shifting our thoughts or whatever it may be, what's going to happen at the crossroads? We're probably going to spiral, right? There's probably going to be some kind of, I'm spiraling into the unknown. That option is there for us at the crossroads. Absolutely. In fact, half of me is taking that option right now. That's why I feel like I'm in my lower frequency right now, because I'm in that option. That option about spiraling into the unknown, right? But we have other options at the crossroads. There are way more options than just panicking, spiraling, catastrophizing, really getting ourselves into a mindset where it's not, peace is sort of nowhere to be found. That sort of peace of mind is nowhere to be had, right? So what are our other options at the crossroads? Okay, this is what I was kind of asking Spirit. What are our other options at the crossroads? Rest. I know that sounds simple, but the idea of rest, restoration. What does restoration mean? Like if I say like, oh, I have this old house and I'm restoring it to its original state. What does that mean? Can we do that for ourselves? Do sometimes we work through burnout? Did I just say that right? Do we sometimes work through burnout? Do we sometimes push ourselves too far? Do we sometimes force our healing? Do we sometimes, push ourselves to go too fast? Yes, 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 and yes, right? And all that stuff, I think, kind of wears us down. So to actually restore our energy to its original state, as though we were a house, right? We have to nurture that house. We have to sort of, we have to pay closer to attention to how we are caring for ourselves. And I think rest is a big, big factor in healing that we underestimate. Rest and even our dreamland is where things get integrated. Rest integrates the healing that we have been working so hard on. So, you can go to therapy your whole life. You can get an astrology reading. You can get a tarot reading, an energy healing. You can unpack all of your trauma. You can get in touch with your inner child. You can do all of those things, and all of those things are so excellent. But if you keep going on like sort of this hamster wheel of just going, 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 while you are doing all of those things, you're not letting those things marinate, right? You're not letting those things completely integrate into your system. I think that's why sometimes we get frustrated on our healing journey. Like, oh, like, why isn't this working yet? Why isn't this thing happening yet? Why am I still feeling this way? You know, I've brought awareness to this, so why is it still bothering me? Right? I think the reality is it takes a long time to integrate things, right? It takes a long time to integrate our realizations. It's one thing to have a realization and an epiphany about yourself, and it's another thing to integrate that realization and that epiphany, right? So going back to the crossroads, again, what is the higher frequency that we can reach at the crossroads? It's rest. It's integration of the things that we've been doing. And the more I think about it, I don't think integration is necessarily work, right? Because we hear this phrase like, do the work, like do the healing work. which, I mean, is like, you know, it could be, I think that's true. I think we need to do the healing work, right? Calling it work might be problematic for some of us, but for some of us, it might be okay to call it that. But I'm thinking about how, like, what it, like, if you think about, like, marinating, I'm a vegetarian, so why am I saying that I'm marinating meat? But if you think about like marinating a steak or something, and you like put all of this stuff in, and then, you know, you put the steak in with like the garlic and the spices and the marinade and whatever else is in there, maybe some olive oil, and then you just put it in the fridge and it just sits there. So like that part where it's actually marinating and sitting there is probably even more important than, or equally important to what you just put into the marinade, right? Like those spices and that olive oil or whatever you put on the steak, that's important for its flavor. But you know what else is important for its flavor? Sitting in the fridge, right? Letting the ingredients soak into the flesh, essentially. Sorry, that kind of sounds gross. But that's what's kind of coming to me at the crossroads. That's probably the choice that we could have, right? And that choice might end up causing us a lot less suffering. You know, if we just accepted that this is a time to integrate, restore, rest, I think the suffering can definitely be alleviated. Now, again, we could also choose to, you know, literally stare at that piece of meat that's marinating and say, hurry up, let's go. I don't have all day. Let's go, let's go, let's go. We got to get to this thing and we got to do this and we got to do that. But we could also do that. But that can also drive us like crazy, right? That can also drive us to, let's say, states of our mental capacity that aren't good, right? And I was hearing, too, from Spirit, they were saying, you know, when we're sitting at this crossroads, if we are brave enough to just rest, to just integrate, we can also sort of let go of this notion of, like, when is this thing getting here? When is this thing coming for me? When is my thing going to change? When is my life going to change? When is this manifestation going to come to fruition? Spirit didn't necessarily say this, but they were sort of giving me this vibe of, all of my people call your people. Like, like literally, like, you will know. I'll have my people call your people. Like when it is time to get up and leave the crossroads and pick a direction, you will know, right? It will be so blaringly obvious that like there's no way you could miss it, right? But are you also going to rush Spirit too to give you the answer? How many times this year have we rushed Spirit to give us the answer to our issues, to our problems, to our challenges. Consider that we're at the crossroads for a reason. And consider that in doing the very thing that we think will never get us the answer, will actually probably bring us the answer faster, right? Consider integration and resting and restoring your soul, restoring your energy, sort of repairing some of your frequency, as I'm calling it. Consider that, just focusing on that and taking some focus off of when is this going to happen? When is this thing going to do? Blah, 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 blah. All of that. Shifting that focus just a little bit is going to be so alleviating in September. And I said too, I was going to mention some of the astrology of September, and Mars stations retrograde on September 9th. It's already in its shadow, right? So we're already feeling Mars retrograde. But there's so many different interpretations of what we could do during a Mars retrograde. You know, at its most basic, you know, like, let's rewind to the most basic principles of Mars. Mars is the planet of war. Mars is the planet of action. Mars is the planet of sort of our courage to do things, right? Our sort of motivation behind the things that we do. So when, think about it, when a planet is in retrograde, so when a planet is sort of slowing down, those themes of that planet are also going to slow down, right? So it might be, you know, the highest vibe, the highest frequency we could probably consider to have during a Mars retrograde, again, is that that idea that this is the time to pause at the crossroads and integrate all of the things that we have learned thus far this year. And again, this could be as deep as integrating some part of your inner child that you discovered this year. This could be as deep as integrating something that you discovered about yourself in therapy. This could be as deep as integrating something you learned this year about your race or your privilege or the history of your country, right? Now that I think about it, we have a shit ton to integrate. And also, no wonder why spirit, you know, doesn't meet us as quickly as our egos would like them to at the crossroads. Because spirit's not really going to come get you and come be like, all right, you got the green light. You know, you don't get the green light when there's so much integration on the back burner that you haven't done. You know, do you feel me? Do you feel me on that? And I think also too, with this sort of spirits kind of like, I'll have my people call your people, like, you'll know, don't worry about it. Don't worry when it's going to happen. You'll know, we'll tell you. Saturn is stationing direct on September 29th. And I also noticed that Saturn is stationing direct in a square to Mars, right? So the Saturn square Mars transit, it's going to be happening pretty much all of September and then also into October. But with one of like the perfections of that transit is that day, September 29th, when Saturn stations direct and then squares Mars in Aries in retrograde. I have a feeling, I'm not sure what's going to happen around that time, September 29th, but I do have a feeling that we might have a better idea of why spirit was telling us to rest and restore our energy around that time. I don't know if it's something that's going to shift in the collective, or I don't know if it's going to be something that shifts for us individually or both. But I think this fall, and especially going into the end of the year, I think there are many reasons why we should consider restoring and building up our energy now. Okay, I don't say that at all to cause panic or despair or be ominous or anything like that. But I do think there are many reasons why we should restore our energy now. If we're feeling burnout at this point, a restorative September to some extent and any extent that can be possible for you would be a good idea, right? So that is and I'm in the Q&A too. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about how we can deal with burnout and how we can like restore ourselves. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in the Q&A. But that is the September sermon, the September message, thinking about what mindset will you have at the crossroads this September. You know, what are you doing for your mind, body, spirit this September at the crossroads? Knowing that there are many choices of how we can act, how we can perceive reality at the crossroads. There are many, you know, different frequencies we can exhibit at the crossroads, and choosing accordingly. Because again, the crossroads can be filled with a lot of suffering and a lot of fear of the unknown. Or it can simply be seen as an opportunity to take your foot off the gas and integrate some of the wisdoms that you've collected, you know, over the past year. So that's the message for September. I'm going to try to keep it. I know it's so unlike me to shorten things up a bit. But I do have quite a big chunk of questions to get to too. And I'm trying to keep this episode under an hour and a half. So, I hope you get something out of the September sermon. If it doesn't make sense now, let it marinate as the month goes on, come back to it. If it doesn't resonate at all, let it fly. Not everything I say has to resonate with you. You are the holder of your own truth, not me. Okay. And I'm going to take a quick break and then we'll be back for the Q&A. Hey, my friends, welcome back. Time for the Q&A. Before we get into the questions, I just wanted to say that on Apple Podcasts, the Horoscope Witch podcast almost has 100 reviews, and I really truly can't believe that. So thank you so much for reviewing and rating the episodes. They really help my podcast algorithm. I don't really know how the podcast algorithm works, but I could imagine that your reviews are helping other listeners find this podcast. So I'm really, really grateful for that. If I have made a podcast in the past that has helped you, that has inspired you, that has, you know, brought some some sunshine to your day or whatever, I would greatly, greatly appreciate if you could hit me with a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. If you haven't already, I would love to see this podcast get to 100 reviews. Honestly, that would like be the dream. So again, I would really appreciate if you have time. If you don't, no worries, no pressure. but yeah, that's where I'm at with the podcast. Now for the Q&A, like I said, you better send me your questions. No, I'm kidding. But if you if you have questions, you know, for the next month's sermon, let me know over email, or over DM, whatever it may be. You know, I can really touch on any topics or any requests that you would like me to speak on. So they could be in the witchcraft realm. They could be in the astrology tarot realm. They could be in the psychology realm, I guess. I mean, I'm not a therapist, but I could do my best with those questions. They could also be in just like the friendship, relationship, self-help, guidance realm. You know, whatever you want to throw at me, I'm open to it, okay? If the only thing I ask is if it's like a deeply personal question, if you can zoom it out just a little bit for me. So for instance, I would rather get a little bit more of a general question about like, how do you know it's time to end a relationship? Okay, I would rather get that than like a very detailed detailed message about a relationship or something along those lines. Not because I don't want to hear about your life necessarily, but because those questions, if they're a little bit more zoomed out and just a little bit more general, I think they reach more people. And then the odds of me answering your question and also helping you and someone else with my answer greatly increases. Okay, you picking up what I'm putting down? Okay. And I think all of the questions that I have for this segment are like perfect, like exactly the type of questions I would be looking for. So let's get into question number one. So someone asked, any spiritual guidance for dealing with depleted energies, a recharge? That's been a struggle for me during quarantine. I would love more insight about spiritual resets or insight about healing your energy. Okay, timely question, right? Because you know, the message for the September sermon was about rest, restoration, and integration, right? So I have to say, though, I gotta admit, like, especially this question, any spiritual guidance for dealing with depleted energies, I do feel like a bit of a hypocrite answering this, and I'll just put that out there, because my greatest repeating card in the tarot of all time is probably the Ten of Wands. Like, when I get the Ten of Wands, I'm like, hello, darkness, my old friend. Like, nice to see you again. And I do, I think, have serious healing to do still around, like, burnout and managing my energy in the best way possible. And so know that I'm answering this question more from like a student's perspective, and I'm definitely not like this like mass spiritual master who who hasn't felt burnout in 20 years or whatever. That's really not me, and it this question almost hits home too hard, because I would honestly ask someone else the same thing, I think. But I think here's the thing. Here's what I'm getting. Okay, when our energy feels depleted, I think it's also because our energy has been fragmented, if that makes sense. So, like, if we think of, like, the fragmentation of energy, fragmentation of energy, it's almost like we have, like, think of this, like, glowing ball of golden light at your center. And that's sort of your life force energy. And when you are feeling depleted, it's sometimes a sign that that life force energy has been like little by little fragmented and sort of given away to different things, right? So I think to restore our energy, and this goes along with the September message for the general horoscope witch population, right? but when we want to restore our energy, we actually want to call back in all parts of ourselves. Because when so much of our little pieces of our energy are flying around to certain things, like let's say we have a big chunk of our energy with a parent that we're worried about. Let's say a big chunk of energy is being given to a stressful situation at work. A big chunk of energy is being given to scrolling on the internet. A big chunk of energy is being given to your fears about the future. All of that stuff, what it's actually doing, it's sort of fragmenting that big ball of life force energy that you would ideally have at your center, right? So we can, how do we call back in the energy to ourselves, right? Well, I hate to bring up boundaries. I hate to bring up the importance of boundaries, but sometimes I'm learning too that the way we avoid burnout is to have good boundaries. boundaries, not only with others, but primarily with ourselves. Like, how much energy are you going to allow yourself to spend every day scrolling on Instagram, right? How much energy do you have per day, you know, that you're going to allow to be given to circumstances that don't serve you or stress you out or cause you anxiety, right? So if we can have even small boundaries, like, I'm only going to give my energy for 1 hour a day to social media, you know, even that can slowly bring back that energy that you had then given away to that thing. Does that make sense? And, you know, I think that topic of, like, social media usage is really coming up almost intuitively, because I don't think we always realize how much social media does fragment our energy. Because we're literally, like, all over the place, like, you know, scrolling, and scrolling can be sort of almost like a version of dissociation, right? At least it is for me at times. So we just don't realize, like, how weird the energy exchange is between us and social media specifically, because it's unfortunately something that has become, well, fortunately and unfortunately, it's become something that is so normalized. We're not thinking deeply about what it's doing to our energy as a whole, right? So that's sort of my first suggestion. If you can, like, whether it's in a journal, like writing down, or even you can, if you're an artist or you're creative in some way, literally draw like a picture of yourself, like draw a stick figure of yourself and like draw this big ball of golden light, life force energy at your center. And then like literally draw all the things floating around you that you're giving your energy to. And I know that sounds silly, but it could be a very powerful exercise to really see on paper what you are giving your energy to on a daily basis. And from there, you can kind of shift certain things, right? And I think too, the thing I wanted to bring up is that, like, just there's a difference between, like, taking a break or taking a breather and actually having a restorative, restful practice, because I think there's a difference between something like having a day off and like watching Netflix. I mean, of course, there's nothing bad about that, and I'm a big Netflix fan, so don't think I'm shaming that. But there's a difference between, like, yeah, like a day off watching Netflix, like relaxing and resting and kind of zoning out, versus restorative rest. Because for rest to be restorative, right, to restore your energy, there's some aspect of rest that sort of has to reconnect you back to yourself, right? So it's not to say that like watching your favorite movie or watching Netflix can't be restful, because it can. But there's more to rest than just that picture, right? Like, what are some restful activities that will actually help you reconnect with your core, right? For me, it's walking in nature. You all know this, right? That's really my restful activity. And I know, like, it's funny because walking, right? Walking is exercise. Walking is light exercise. But that is the most restorative and restful activity for me, because it's that activity that allows me to reconnect with just my being. And again, it's so hard to connect with who we are when our energy is fragmented in 20 different directions. No wonder we're so anxious. No wonder we're lost. No wonder we don't know how to connect with our intuition or spirit or whatever. Our life force energy is being given all over the place to, like, all different kinds of things, right? So I also think one of the things I wanted to bring up with this question too is, healing, and I think healing can exhaust us at times. I think sometime, again, going back to the September message, this question really felt in alignment with the September message. You know, healing is exhausting. So if you do feel exhausted from your healing, I think it's a sign too that, you know, integration now needs to happen. Like the the purging and the pulling and the sort of the evacuation of like a lot of our like shadows and traumas and demons or whatever, like sometimes we have to pause that a little bit so we can integrate what has actually come out, right? If we're going to purge something from our psyche, we also have to integrate that thing that we just purged, right? So that's the other thing too. I think we think of burnout as like, I've been working all the time and I've no time to rest, which is true. And the unfortunate reality of many, people in at least my home country of America. But also I think burnout can come from pushing our healing too hard. It can come from, yeah, like forcing our healing, and that's not good either. We can only do so much, you know, on the healing journey. We can't really push or force our healing. The healing happens when it's ready. And one thing, in my ancestral wound of like workaholism, which I don't use that word in a cutesy light way, like I think being a workaholic, or like, you know, seeing like parents who are workaholics or having ancestors who were quote-unquote workaholics or whatnot, like, you know, carrying that wound having some relationship to the word, like, or the phrase, I'm a workaholic, I think it's a very serious thing, so I don't use that lightly at all. But I think there's something about, like, the way our work lives are set up, it's like, you push yourself through burnout until you get to the vacation, and then in the vacation, you, like, collapse, right? Like, I even hear, like, people saying, like, oh, I finally got a vacation from work, and then I got sick. Because it's literally like your body doesn't even have time to be sick, right? And how sick is that, right? So in this sort of like capitalistic cycle of toxicity, that's really what we're living in. And I think one way we can try to fight that is to rest even if we're not burnt out. Like to allow ourselves rest and relaxation and restorative activities like meditation, walking, anything that like provides us with like joy or pleasure, whatever it may be. If we can allow ourselves those things, even when we're feeling like our energy is high, I think that would make a difference too. And I think we would experience less burnout overall. And that's personally something that I would love to invite into my life. And I think I'm finally at a breaking point with myself and my own cycle of burnout. I'm done with the Ten of Wands. Like I'm done getting the Ten of Wands. I really do want to shift my life where I have scheduled time to rest, whether I consciously believe I need it or not. Okay, so just some things to think about. I could go on this topic forever. And I really appreciate this question again, because it really piggybacked off of the September message. So someone also asked here, I'm wondering how to make online friends. I don't even really know how to make real life friends, but it feels especially hard virtually. People don't always pick up on your emotions virtually, and I feel like a lot of people are out to get each other on social media right now. But I don't have many friends in real life who like tarot and astrology. I see them online, but I don't know how to reach them without coming on too strong or being creepy. Okay, I thought this was such a good question. And I have to say, just to put it out there, I feel like this topic of an adult wanting more connection or more friendship comes up in literally like 80% of my readings, I feel like. I think all adults feel how hard it is to really make friends or have a connection with people. Because again, going back to like the toxic cycles of capitalism, let's literally relate every single question from this Q&A back to the toxic cycles of capitalism. But the toxic cycles of capitalism, like, there's no value placed on like having time in your life to connect with people or to even like, you know, make new friends or have friends. So like sometimes when I hear people say like, oh, really hold on to those friends like that you made in childhood or whatever, like really hold on to them because as an adult you don't get much, you know, opportunity to make friends. There's truth in that, but also that's kind of sad, right? It's kind of sad that that is the truth of our situation in a lot of ways, right? So I'll say that I actually think that it's easier to make friends virtually. I do. I really feel like it's easier to make friends virtually. At least it has been for me. And I've said this before, but I did not expect to sort of make friendships from this podcast, but I have. And there's just been like a lot of surprises in store for like who I met through this podcast and the friends that I've made through this podcast or whatever. And I think it started though, because I was putting out some like version of truth about myself that I hadn't put out before. So like this person had said, like in real life, I don't have many friends who are into tarot and astrology. That is true for me too. But once I started putting that part of myself out there in some context, I think in displaying that truth about who I am, I attracted other people who had that truth, and that was for the most part really beneficial to me. Now, I'm not saying that, of course, again, you're not going to vibe just because you like tarot and astrology doesn't mean that you're going to vibe with every single person who also likes tarot and astrology, right? Like, we're all still humans. But I think one way you could start with making more virtual friends is just, you know, making your own content that really brings you light and joy and feels in alignment with your truth. And then naturally seeing, you know, who is attracted to your content, like who is commenting on your content, and also whose content are you attracted to too. It might be also this sort of this energetic line between you and someone else that's sort of like almost a line of healing. I'm thinking of the Two of Cups, like a healing relationship can be possible, you know, between two people who are sort of, I guess, understanding each other's message. So yeah, and I think too, something that was coming up is that once we can kind of like, you know, I don't know, I'm like, I feel like I'm giving like dating tips or something, but like, you know, if we're really vibing with someone online, like let's say we're having like really good conversations over DM, or we comment on each other's pictures or like each other's pictures or whatnot. You know, something too that you can think about is that like just because you're friends with someone virtually doesn't mean you can't do things with them virtually as well, if that makes sense. Because I'm thinking there are so many online tarot classes, online astrology conferences. There's literally a free herbalism workshop, witch webinar literally every single weekend, right? So you could like potentially too, like if you feel like you're vibing with someone virtually online, you know, invite them to a virtual event to come with you. You know, this is something that I've definitely done with some of my like internet friends or some friends that, you know, unfortunately at this moment I haven't had the pleasure of meeting in person, but that's something that I've done. And it's like a way you guys can kind of hang out only even though you're not in person, right? And just to touch on that feeling when you said, I feel like a lot of people are out to get each other on social media right now, I would agree. And sometimes I get caught up in that as well. But I also will offer you a counterpoint that personally, I have met way more like nice, authentic, really cool people on social media than I have met like haters or people who want to like mess with you or send you a hate comment or something. Like the vast majority of people that I've felt called to interact with have been positive experiences. So maybe just allowing yourself to sort of reach out or just like, you know, asking someone a question, you know, over DM, or even joining a online tarot community or an online astrology class and seeing who's in that class. And just going from there. I don't know if that's like any mind-blowing advice, but I empathize with you, because I think I have the same fears. And still though, I think we're all intuitive here. We can kind of use our intuition for like who vibes with us and who doesn't. Okay. And then if we feel like we're vibing with someone, we can kind of, take the friendship to the next level and start talking more or whatnot. Okay. Sorry. I feel like I just rambled, but, that question was, I don't think I did it quite a justice, but I hope something helped in there. And okay. Someone also said the third question, I've been thinking about how as I've gotten more into spirituality, I've become a lot less silly and taken things more seriously. And I was wondering if you thought about that and if you have any thoughts on reconciling the two. I miss seeing the world through that silly lens, but I also don't want to quote unquote go back to sleep. This was really interesting because this idea that like life becomes more serious if you're incorporating spiritual practice. I think life can become more serious once we like are really beginning to commit to our healing journey. And I think life can feel kind of dark, because in order to heal, I think there's certain like moments of darkness that kind of want to be unearthed within us, right? Or there maybe are certain memories that are wanting to be recalled, or there's just certain like literally like trauma that could come up on the healing path. So it feels like I think sometimes the spiritual path or the path of healing can feel very, very heavy at times. So I definitely get what this person is saying here. Like, you know, once we start walking down the spiritual path, everything becomes serious and everything contains meaning and everything is spiritual in some context. But also I think one of the most important parts of healing is to find joy and find pleasure and, you know, healing through those things, healing through being silly. I think that's one of the ways we reconnect to our inner child too. And, you know, it's funny because the message for the September, of course, we just listened to it, was like rest and integration and letting our healing kind of marinate within us, right? You know, something else we could do at the crossroads is find joy and pleasure somewhere. Because maybe that is the mistake here. Maybe that's the misunderstanding here. Like in order to heal or in order to be spiritual, we have to be entirely focused on our healing. And that can be quite depressing, quite frankly. And I think I've gotten caught in that too. Like that feeling of like, is my healing like making me depressed? Like, so I don't think like fun and silliness and happiness and finding pleasure are separate from the spiritual path at all in any way. Like, I think even, like, the most enlightened, like, monk or Buddhist, yeah, Buddhist philosopher or, like, Buddhist monk is, like, probably, like, a funny guy. Like, you know, it's, like, even our most enlightened spiritual gurus, like, know the importance of finding joy on your path. So I think if we're feeling like this, if we're feeling like I've lost my joy or I've lost, like, my stillness and I'm just getting so sucked into my own darkness in sort of the name of healing, I think it's maybe a good idea to give ourselves a break, and also making sure that we do have enjoyable things in our life. Like, if we miss, like, a childish, silly part of ourselves, think of an activity that brings that out in you and do it, right? Because a spiritual class, like, okay, let's take this. Let's say there's a class on, like, healing, or there's an astrology class, or there's a tarot class, or there's a shamanistic class or something that you're interested in. Okay, consider that a dance class or an acting class or an improv class or something like that, which you wouldn't necessarily associate with, like, healing and spirituality. Consider how those things could be equally healing, right? Like, you know, that's the thing about spirituality. You understand and you realize that all things are spiritual. And you could very much have this huge, deeply healing spiritual experience in a dance class, right? Or in a painting class, something that you didn't go into it thinking, like, oh, this is for my healing or this is for my spiritual path. And as I'm speaking, I feel like I really need to take a dance class or something. My client said this in their session the other day. They asked me if it would be a good idea to take a dance class. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think that's a good idea for everybody. Like, can we get someone to do an online dance class? Because I feel like we need that. We need some to sort of shake up our energy and invite in joy. Okay, so question number 4. Even though I have psychic experiences, spiritual experiences, and incredible synchronicities pretty much daily, there is a part of my brain that worries I'm batshit. I kind of just allow the tension between the two parts to just exist inside of me without judgment, because spirituality supports my mental health, even if it were just a projection. But I wonder, what is your experience opinion on this? I can't just read the cards and think it isn't a convo with spirit. That would take the wind out of the whole thing for me. Okay, this is a really interesting question. I feel like this is a question that that definitely a highly sensitive person or an empath would wonder, because we think so deeply about everything. We think so deeply about our beliefs, right? And obviously, I'm kind of biased in the way I will answer this question, because I obviously really, really deeply believe in that there is something. Like, I believe that there's a universal power or there's a universal source. I believe in karma. I believe in past lives. I believe that every human has some kind of spiritual connection, right? So the way I would answer this question is obviously very different than someone who's an atheist or whatnot. But I do really think that spiritual connection and talking to our guides / God / our ancestors / whatever you want to call it, right? I think spiritual connection is really probably the most natural human state of being, right? It's something that we've done as humans forever, right? Like, even if we go back, like, way, way back in time, there was always some kind of mode of divination. There was always some kind of old wise one of of the group. There was always some kind of person who held a spiritual role of, you know, in the group, right? Even if we go way back to like caveman times. So I really think that spirituality is inherent inside of us all. But I also think that there's sort of this internalized, there is some sort of internalized fear, right? Because historically speaking, oh God, let's not get on a tangent here, but something I'm thinking about is, let's go to like something like medieval times where, like the king was the only one to own a Bible, right? Because someone like a peasant didn't have a Bible. They didn't have access to what was considered to be God, right? It was sort of like only the rich person within the feudal system, only the rich person had access to God, right? And I think that's also been going on for a very long time in human history. We even see this in American society in some way, like the president of the United States, like, has to be Christian, essentially. Like, there's something about like leaders or the people who run society or who run our country, sort of having this like higher access to God or this higher access to the universe than the peasant has, quote unquote. And although we're in the 21st century now, like really anybody can really, at least in this country, in some contexts, like anybody can, in theory, we could all believe anything we want, right? But I think that like internalized, it's almost like an internalized misogyny or this internalized fear or the internalized patriarchy kind of keeps us from sort of owning our own spirituality for ourselves. And sometimes it can make us doubt, like, is this really real? Like, am I allowed to have this for myself, right? Because for the history of the world, it feels like we've always given the power of God away to someone else, at least in the context of religion, right? I mean, there's obviously like some kind of shift in the history of humanity. Like, I think there was probably a time in the beginning where we all just believed that we had spiritual connection, and then we sort of shifted into the sort of like Abrahamic traditions where we were sort of giving authority and power away to some higher up to tell us like how God works. So anyways, long story short, I think it's quite quite an accomplishment of us, you know, to really just claim our beliefs as our own. But I think because we have such a vast history in literally the history of humanity of being told for the most part, like, you can't have access to God, or you can only access God on these terms or on my terms or through the terms of this law, that can really like mess us up long term for a really long time. And consider too, whoever asked this question, consider that maybe that voice inside of your head that maybe doubts your beliefs or asks like, is this really real, or am I allowed to do this? It could very much well be coming from the inner child, especially if there's a part of your childhood where gaslighting or something like that happened a lot. That could very well be where this is coming from, but it also could be coming from an ancestral wound too, because maybe you are the first one in your ancestral lineage to really reclaim like, I have this spirituality, I am a witch, or I am a psychic, or I am an intuitive, or whatever. And that's quite a powerful thing to claim after years and generations of people sort of giving their power over to like religious or patriarchal figures. Now, granted, I want to be clear, like, I don't think that, you know, I'm not hating on religion in any way. And if anybody's listening to this who identifies as, like, a Christian or identifies as part of, like, an organized religion, I'm not hating on you in any way, shape, or form. And I would think if you're here, you're probably aware of the problems associated with whatever practice, you know, you have, right? I mean, I think everybody who has some level of awareness knows there's, like, problems with every belief system, right? including my own, right? Yeah, so I think it's something to think about, how it might not be about you, or it might not be about you doing something wrong or you thinking about it in the wrong way. It might just be that you are working through a greater point of ancestral karma than you realize. So, yes. Okay. And this other question kind of piggybacks off of that. So someone asked, in along the lines of, like, how do you know you are a witch? And then the person also said, the one thing I want to mention here, though, is that in addition to struggling with the validation of calling myself a witch, I also have this fear of co-opting something that isn't mine. Could this just be another form of me trying to justify why I can't take a risk? Like, if I warn myself that I could be appropriating something by exploring the adoption of a certain identity, maybe I'm secretly feeding the fear that's holding me back. Okay. So I feel like my clients and listeners are such deep thinkers. I appreciate you all so much, because every one of these questions has been, like, very, very deep, like, very, like, you all obviously think of life in a very deep and, you know, exploratory way. And I really appreciate that. And I really love your minds. I love where your minds go. And thank you for sharing these things with me. So first and foremost, like, just to answer the most basic question, like, how do you know you're a witch? This is something that I struggled with so much. And if you listen to the very first couple episodes, by the way, please don't. But if you did go back and listen to those things, I'm pretty sure, like, when I first started this podcast, I don't think I identified as a witch necessarily. Like, I think I was doing, like, spells and, like, rituals and things like that, but that idea of identifying as a witch was scary, because there's sort of this, that, like, Instagram aesthetic witch kind of thing. And I just knew I couldn't be that. And that was sort of my idea of what being a witch or claiming my witchcraft was. But then as I got more into it, I realized, like, wait a second, like, for me, at least, being a witch is sort of this just, like, make your own religion kind of thing. Like, that's what appeals to me about being a witch. Like, I am my own priest, or, like, I am my own priestess. I can, you know, have these, like, rituals when I feel like I need it, or I can sort of do a spell. Or spells to me are really just a fancy word for a manifestation, right? So when I feel drawn, I can use my own power to help something come to fruition. So I think when we put it like that, like, witchcraft is really just a sect of spirituality. It doesn't become as scary as, like, calling yourself a witch and having this whole, like, Instagram dark and spooky Instagram aesthetic, right? And just for the record too, you don't need to have, like, a cauldron or crystals or even tarot cards to be a witch. All you need to have to be a witch is yourself and the power of visualization. That's it, right? Yourself and the power of visualization are really the two main spell ingredients for anything. And by the way, too, on the topic of spell work, I think every witch has a different definition of, like, how often they do spell work or what spell work really even is. And although I call myself a witch, I don't do many spells. Like, I only do a spell if I feel very passionate and very serious about it. And most of my spells are not money spells or love spells. Really, none of my spells are like that. I use spell work for mainly making psychological shifts within myself. So I may do a spell for, you know, the eradication of my self-doubt, right? Like, that's my idea of a spell too. So there's no definition. There's no, like, there's not, like, a checklist that you have to be like, all right, yeah, I'm a witch now. Like, you can just be one if that's what you feel. And I think if you're even asking yourself the question, like, am I a witch? I think it's a sign that, like, you feel drawn to the identity, and that's okay. Now, I really appreciate the part of this question about, like, feeling fear of appropriation, because honestly, I've found that at literally every turn of spirituality, we find some sect of appropriation, right? Some kind of spiritual appropriation going on. Just like, I think for me, just to be clear about my definition of appropriation and what I mean by that, it kind of means like taking something from a culture that is not your own and sort of presenting it as your own, or sort of like whitewashing it, essentially. So even something like Reiki, something that I participate in, right? Like Reiki and the chakra system, we could even see there's some appropriation when it comes to the way we talk about the chakras, because maybe we don't do diligence to explaining the religious origins of the chakras. Even so, oh, you know what's a great example of appropriation is like yoga, essentially. Like, and I'm not saying that you know, we shouldn't do yoga. I mean, I do yoga all the time. I know a lot of yoga practitioners that are excellent, but we know that sort of that where the line is between a well taught yoga class that pays respect to, like probably both Buddhism and Hinduism, right? Because yoga comes from both of those practices, but also just like a yoga practice that really does diligence to, yeah, its origins, versus like cardio yoga, bring your weights, and like like what the heck is that, right? Like, that's like a clear example of something like appropriation-y that we all have probably seen, right? And I think witchcraft is the same. I think the safest bet is to just be, this is what I say, I've said this before, begin with your own ancestry, right? If you can. So begin with like, researching like witchcraft and like folklore from, for me, it was Italy, right? So I got a book about Italian witchcraft. And then from there, you can kind of see like, what did my ancestors, you know, think about this realm of spirituality, and how can I build off of this so it feels authentic to me? And granted, for me too, like there's other sects of witchcraft that I'm deeply intrigued with, like that are not my own, right? So I'm deeply interested in reading and learning about voodoo, and even like the Santeria religion. You know, I love learning about like the Orishas, the goddesses like Oshun and Oya, Yemaya, like, you know, the Orisha goddesses are something that I really, really love learning about. But like, am I ever going to teach a class on voodoo? No. Am I ever going to call myself like a priestess of Oshun? No, absolutely not. Right. So I think hopefully as a society, we're having more common sense about how we're going about things, right? And I think it's okay to have interest in a culture or in something that is not particularly where your ancestors are from. But I think just having awareness, like I need to come at this with the utmost respect, or I need to be very much aware of what I can learn from this and how I can show respect to this, and not necessarily like taking it or claiming it for my own, right? And I think we can do that with witchcraft too. But I will say also, I think literally every single culture, every single country or place in the world probably would have a history of witchcraft from their culture, right? So I think this idea of witchcraft exists all over, because the idea of like the divine feminine exists all over too. So I hope that helps someone. And I would, of course, like get a second opinion too, because I'm not an expert on cultural appropriation in any way, right? And so for the last question here, I think this is a really good place to end. I've been thinking about it lately, but as I learn about astrology and my own natal chart, I've noticed that I have a lot of placements and aspects that may be considered challenging or not ideal, and it makes me feel, well, kind of bad. Do you ever feel like there is a dark side to studying astrology, or do you have any insight on how to confront these kinds of feelings that come up when studying astrology? I don't think it's a coincidence that I'm interested in astrology, but I do sometimes think I might have an unhealthy read on my own chart. Do you ever see folks use astrology in an unhealthy way? Oh man, this question was really, really good, right? And don't, like, as a person who is an astrologer, I feel this way sometimes about my own chart, right? So I think it proves just how biased we can be to our own perspective. And, you know, I think with anything, we can see this even when we're reading tarot cards or when we're whatever. Sometimes we tend to think the worst of ourselves, right? We are our own worst critics, truly. And I think astrology and the study of astrology can sometimes like exacerbate that if you aren't careful, right? So we could look at anything quote unquote challenging in our chart, like a square, or you know, our malefics and where the malefic planets are in our chart or something, and like automatically think like we're doomed, right? But it's really not the case. I think here's the thing. What astrology is astrology is like any other spiritual practice, in the sense that it's the study of duality. So you can't have one, it's like a magnet. You can't have like the plus side without the negative side. You can't have the darkness without the light. So the chart is really just a collection of dualities. And if you're not careful, you might just only be looking at the dark side and kind of spiraling yourself into some darkness about yourself, perceived darkness about yourself. Which may not be entirely true. You know, you might be onto something, but then also not recognizing the light that's also in your chart. You do yourself a disservice. And I also think it's important to point out that we cannot see one placement in isolation from all our other placements, if that makes sense. So let's say we have, I don't know, the worst of the worst. We have this really, like, you know, malefic planet. It's in a square. It has no mutual reception. It has no reception. It's really bad, right? Anything like it's something like that, right? So we can't, even if we have that, we can't see that just in isolation from the rest of the chart. It's either all or nothing. We either take the whole chart, or we don't, let's not look at it, right? Right, if we're just going to zoom in on like one point of darkness, it might not be worth it, because we're forgetting about the other side of the coin. And going back to that idea that astrology is just another way of seeing duality, I think what I've found as an astrologer, it's sort of like each chart that I see has like an equal and opposite reaction, if that makes sense, which I can think it kind of does because everything is energy, right? So let's say we do have this thing that could be interpreted as dun dun dun, right? Like something that's negative, like a astrology book would say, like, this is negative. Okay, there's probably an equal and opposite reaction to that as well. There's probably something that sort of balances that out in the chart too. And the best thing that was ever said about astrology wasn't even said by an astrologer, and he wasn't even talking about astrology. But Walt Whitman, he said, like, I am large, I contain multitudes. And then I think also Walt Whitman said something like, do I contradict myself? Very well, I contradict myself, right? And he was a Gemini. So those two statements, I am large, I contain multitudes, and do I contradict myself? Well, very well then, I contradicted myself. Those two statements are like the best statements about astrology ever made, because we have to remember the chart does contain multitudes. The chart is large. The chart does have contradictions. I think everybody has a contradiction in their chart. There could be someone who has, has something that, maybe manifests. I'm using myself as an example. Saturn is very close to my sun in my chart. So, this often manifests for me, I think, as a lot of self-doubt, right? But granted, if you have Saturn on your sun, just take this, because again, now I'm speaking about my chart in a biased way, right? So take this with a grain of salt. But I think there's an equal and opposite reaction in my chart, though, because while I have that Saturn on my sun, I also have other points in my chart where I have this like huge courage, or I have this really big motivation to do things, and I'm very, very motivated to overcome my fears, and I have a courageousness that's there. So like for all of the things that all of that energy in my chart that might doubt myself, that might be a lot of self-doubt, there's also a lot of energy that's really pushing me forward. And everybody has something like that in their chart. Everybody has something like, well, this is like my weakness, or like this is sort of where my Achilles heel is, but then this is where I really shine. And, again, when we are doing our own astrological research, sometimes it can be like, beep, 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 beep. Like, where's the part in the chart that's like the worst? Like, and we don't do enough with our, our gifts and our, our gifts in this lifetime, okay? And I know this person knows this because this person has gotten a reading with me. I think actually after she asked me this question, she booked a reading with me. But I'll just say this to everybody. If you do feel, and granted, before I say this, I want to be very clear, I am not saying this as a marketing technique at all, okay? You can go get an astrology reading with anybody you feel called to. But if you really do feel this way about your chart, like if you really feel like I feel doomed and I have all this darkness and bad things in my chart and it makes me feel bad about myself, you might consider going to see a professional astrologer, right? you might consider, getting someone to help you see everything in your chart. Because remember, astrology isn't just like this textbook definition. Astrology is also like poetry. You're synthesizing, you're putting everything together. Your chart is like a poem. So if you're only reading one stanza, you're not going to get the whole picture, okay? Okay, I think that's all we've got today, kids. So thanks so much for listening. So much love to you, sending you a lot of healing for September. If you know the deal, again, just to review, No, I'm not. I'm not going to review. You guys know. You know where to find me. You know what to do. You know the deal. And I will see you popping back in September for some interviews and some other episodes. And I think the next Highly Sensitive Person episode, so if you have not gotten on that book club, get on it. It's awesome. And I'll see you in the next episode. Before you go, I just wanted to say thank you so much to my Patreon supporters. You are all supporting the creation of this podcast in a bigger way than you even realize. If you want to know more about my offerings on Patreon, including access to the Secret Horoscope Witch YouTube channel, the link is in the show notes. I am a professional astrologer, tarot reader, Reiki practitioner, and psychic intuitive. If you are interested in working with me one-on-one or getting a reading from me, you can visit my website, horoscopewitch.com, to learn more about my offerings. If you find this podcast to be helpful, I would greatly appreciate your rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Your reviews not only make my day, but also increase the chances of others finding this podcast too. And if you like this episode, feel free to share it with a friend.